This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky in July 2014. Well, to be honest, there's not an awful lot of darkness. In fact, I stayed up until after 11:30 before it got really dark last night. And that's about the same sort of time before the summer solstice as July's afterwards. So what do we see? Well, at about 1 o'clock at the beginning of July, about midnight in the middle, or 11 o'clock at the end of July, this is what you might see. And we'll start looking towards the south, west and east. Well, setting over in the west is a fairly bright star called Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes, the kite. A little bit up to its left is a rather lovely circle of stars called Corona Borealis, but not very bright. And then we come to a very nice constellation, still moving eastwards and upwards, is Hercules. The four brightest stars form an asterism called the Keystone, and I'll come back to that in the highlights of the month. Moving over again, we come to perhaps the brightest star you'll see in the sky, which is Vega, in the small constellation of Lyra, the Lyre. It again has a very interesting binocular object that I'll point out later on. Over and slightly up to the left of Vega is another bright star called Deneb, the brightest star in Cygnus the Swan. The five brightest stars of Cygnus are in the form of a cross called the Northern Cross. The faintest, the lowest one, which is down to the lower left of Vega, is called Albireo, and a small telescope shows it to be a beautiful double star, with almost a golden and blue contrast between the two colours. Passing downwards through Vulpecula and Sagitta, the arrow, very small constellations, we come to Aquila, the eagle, with its bright star Altair. The three stars, Altair, Vega and Deneb, make up what is called the Summer Triangle. And this area is one of the nicest areas in the whole sky, I think almost as good as the Orion region that we see in the winter. Down below these constellations, not particularly bright stars in the constellations of Serpens Caput, Ophiuchus, Serpens Clouda. But way in the south, around midnight, is the constellation of Sagittarius. And given a good low horizon to the south, you might make out the stars that form what is called the teapot. And there's some lovely open clusters and nebulae in that part of the sky, all observed by Charles Messier and given Messier numbers. So do have a look at a Messier catalogue. Or you could even look and search for the astronomical A-list, which is on the Jodrell Bank website. I wrote perhaps 15 years ago now, and it will list some of the best objects to see in each of the constellations. And finally, don't forget a tiny constellation, very pretty, down to the left of Cygnus and Lyra, called Delphinus the Dolphin. Four stars make a little pentangle, the body of the dolphin, and a further star, its tail. Well, what about the planets? To be honest, it's not the best month for planets this month. Jupiter passes behind the Sun on the 24th, so will only really be visible in the first week or so, low above the western horizon, to be honest. Probably not worth trying to observe. Saturn is a little bit better. It lies in Libra near the wide double star Alpha Librae. It falls in brightness from about plus 0.4 to plus 0.5. On the 21st, it halts its retrograde motion westwards across the sky and resumes its motion eastwards through the stars. The rings this month are at their minimum tilt this year of 21 degrees, but that still allows them to be well seen. But sadly, for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, Saturn is moving towards the most southerly part of the ecliptic. And so even when due south, when it was at opposition a month or so ago, it's still at quite a low elevation, and the atmosphere limits our view. So again, it's probably basked its best this year. Mercury. Having passed between the Earth and the Sun, that's called inferior conjunction, on June the 19th, Mercury is now seen before dawn, and lies down to the lower left of Venus for much of the month, but it'll be too faint to see, really, for the first week or so. It reaches greatest western elongation on July the 12th. That's when it's furthest in angle over to the west of the Sun, when half the disk is roughly illuminated and at magnitude plus 0.4. So hard to see, really, in the morning twilight. It then slowly falls towards the horizon, but as it does so, its brightness increases to minus 1.4, so maybe easier to spot. And I'll come back to that in the highlights. Mars, in Virgo, lies close to Spica during July, and on the 13th passes just 1.3 degrees up and a little to its left. It's shrinking now from 9.5 to 7.9 arc seconds, and at the same time its brightness falls from magnitude 0 to plus 0.4. Really, one has to look for it as soon as darkness falls, but even then it'll be quite low above the horizon, and only the most obvious features, such as Syrtis Major, are likely to be seen. Venus. Venus rises in the east-northeast as morning twilight begins. But even by sunrise, is only about 20 degrees above the horizon. Its disk, now showing a full gibbous phase as it moves beyond the sun, drops in angular size from 12 to 11 arc seconds. But at the same time, the percentage of the disk, which is illuminated, increases from 85 to 92%. As a result, the effective area reflecting the sun's light stays almost constant, so there's only a drop of 0.1 magnitudes from minus 3.9 to minus 3.8 in brightness. During the first few days of the month, Venus lies close to Aldebaran in Taurus. So what about this month's highlights? Well, on the night sky page of the website, I put a bit more about Saturn, which is still probably just about worth seeing. To find it in the sky, follow the arc of the plough's handle downwards to first find Arcturus, I mentioned earlier. Continue down to find the white first magnitude star Spica in Virgo. And Saturn, a little brighter than Spica, lies in Libra down to its lower left and will appear slightly yellow in colour. But again, it won't be that high above the horizon, and you have to look for it almost as darkness falls. But high in the sky in July are these two objects I hinted at earlier. There's a lovely globular cluster in Hercules called M13. The four brightest stars make up the keystone. If you move two-thirds of the way up the right-hand side of the keystone, you should, with binoculars, see a little fuzzy blob. And a telescope will show it as a beautiful globular cluster, a spherical concentration of stars. And on the Night Sky website, I put on a picture of M13 that I took a month or so ago. Again, I mentioned Vega, and just to its left is the multiple star system, Epsilon Lyrae, often called the double-double. With binoculars, a double star is seen. But when observed with a telescope, under good seeing conditions, each of these two stars is revealed to be a double star, hence the name, the double-double. The end of June and the beginning of July are a very good time to spot what are called noctilucent clouds. They're most commonly seen in the deep twilight towards the north from our latitude. They're the highest clouds in the atmosphere at heights about 80 kilometres or 50 miles. Normally they're too faint to be seen, but they can be visible when illuminated from sunlight, which is coming from below the northern horizon, so illuminating them, but the rest of the lower parts of the atmosphere are in shadow. So it's worthwhile, on a clear night, as light is draining from the northwestern sky long after sunset, take a look towards the north, and you might just spot them. Well, there are a few little groupings of the planets and the moon. On July the 5th, looking southwest after sunset, you should be able to spot Mars lying between Spica, Alpha Virginis, and a first quarter moon. Perhaps more interesting, on the 5th and 6th of July, about an hour after sunset, you may be able to see the two brightest asteroids, Vesta and Ceres, come within 10 arc minutes of each other in the constellation of Virgo. And on the night sky page, I provide a star chart to help you find them. Ceres will be at magnitude 8.5, with Vesta at magnitude 7.2. Although Ceres is almost twice the size of Vesta, having a diameter of 940 kilometres, it's less bright for two reasons. Firstly, it's further away, further out in the main asteroid belt. But secondly, it has a much darker surface than Vesta, and only reflects about 9% of the sunlight falling on it. Whereas Vesta, a medium grey colour, actually reflects about 42% of the sunlight falling on it, which is actually quite a lot, and that makes it the brightest of all the asteroids. And a nice thought, although invisible, NASA's Dawn spacecraft is nearby in direction, making its way towards Ceres, which it will begin orbiting in the spring of 2015. On July the 7th, an hour after sunset, you might spot Saturn and a gibbous moon. Finally, on July the 24th, before dawn, looking east, not far above the horizon, you should fairly easily spot Venus at magnitude minus 3.9, and that'll be about 4.5 degrees to the lower left of a thin crescent moon, making it quite easy to find. And if you have got a good low eastern horizon, you may also be able to spot Mercury at magnitude minus 0.9, some 8 degrees down to the lower left of Venus. Well, there's not an awful lot of time to observe the sky during July, but I do hope you have a go.